Morning. Happy New Year. It's good to see you all. You are clearly not the host that I saw stumbling home at 4:30 this morning. I'd like to invite forward Jim Jordan to lay our chalice this morning. Jim's a longtime member of the congregation, an active leader in the environmental action team, and a committed member of the Board of Trustees.
Could you please turn one microphone down? And you're speaking to two mics.
Let's find him.
You hold down. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As frozen earth holds the determined seed, this sacred space holds our weariness, our worry, our laughter, and our celebration. Let us bring seed and soul into the light of thought, the warmth of community, and the hope of love. Let us see together, let us hear together, love together, let us worship. We let this chalice, symbol of our faith, part of this, our hope.
As an engineer, I learned to apply perspective in order to build the right awareness to engage in the creative process. Perspective is an essential cornerstone of progress, as important as our awareness of celestial mechanics is to our understanding of the seasons and life itself. Take the fact that we are 18,144,000 kilometers from where we were in our solar system just on Christmas Day. Despite appearances, the planet is really going places. So this reminds me to ask myself, how much progress am I making in my own life, my personal life? How far have I come? Am I going places? How will I know? This perspective demands that I be present in my own boots, in my own home, and in my own neighborhood, that I must take care and love myself right there. For me, perspective is particularly relevant on New Year's Day. It's like a shared birthday, a day of new beginnings for everyone, with its trademark revolutionary declarations that we call resolutions. Today has symbolic value for me because on this arbitrary day, our distance from a fixed place in our solar system is actually unchanged from 365 1/4 days ago. This is true for any day, but today we pay more attention. And that suggests another important perspective. Despite all this spinning and movement and change in our individual and collective lives, this serves to remind me that there is also an unchanging and true center, which is reassuring. We have a secure and stable place to come home to. My progress, the purpose of my own resolutions, can be measured by how effectively my daily rituals bring me home to a secure and true center, to my best self and my happiest nature. I see it as a place where I can be at peace in the flow of life, where my greatest challenges are a good match for my developing skills at being human. But there is another very human perspective, and that is the perspective that others bring to us. I have long seen myself as a work in progress, and you can see that my family is here today, so I should let you know that my family has for that matter too, and they are others also. Many people who participate in the ritual of making New Year's resolutions celebrate the role such feedback plays in assessing and recalibrating our daily rituals and behaviors. As social beings, an iterative kind of trial and error approach towards progress demands that we see ourselves as our true friends, skilled mentors, and role models see us. Their feedback can be a little scary at times. But this knowledge is highly necessary if we were to move forward from a needed awareness back to our true center, to a state of integration, wholeness, and connection, to becoming grounded here on earth. This third perspective is what propelled me to become a member of this congregation. As an article of faith, I have placed you all in my personal feedback loop, being confident as I am that I will show up as imperfect, from time to time. This light of shared awareness represents for me a perspective I can use to grow many new years to come. So with that, I say celestial greetings to everyone and Happy New Year.
Oh, would you look at that? We skipped right past the meditation over there. Why don't we do that now? I invite you into a moment of quiet reflection, of prayer, meditation. I invite you to put your feet flat on the ground. Feel yourself in the seat. Feel yourself connected. I invite you to breathe in and breathe out. I also invite you to, Victoria and I are going to go back and forth, and I'm going to say some words, and Victoria's going to sing a line. If you feel so inclined, I invite you to join her in singing that line between each section as we progress.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, new day, love, fill my sight.
Spirit of life, Spirit of love and grace, for some among us, this has been a year of great new joys. New babies, new jobs, new partners, new friends, new beauty in life. The work of creation is never finished. New hope and new possibilities abound. We look back on this year and see the bright flowers scattered over its face.
Come, my joy, come, my light. Come, new day, love, fill my sight.
For some among us, this has been a year of great old joys. Children growing more independent, leaving work behind to a new adventure, returning to places from our past, marking friendships by the decade. We look back on those connections with love, reminded that constancy and growth is a gift.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, new day, love, fill my sight.
For some among us, this has been a year of new sorrows, too. The loss of a partner, a friend, a child, a parent. The end of a job or a relationship, a new sadness or sickness. We look back on those new sorrows and hold them tenderly, seeking peace with the pain they brought and healing for the path ahead.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, new day, love, fill my sight.
For some among us, this has been a year of old sorrows that linger still. Relationships with family that are still broken, children whose lives are filled with pain, choices and addictions that may haunt us still. We look back on those two, remembering their tears like rain on glass, streaking the world beyond.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, you.
For most of us, this year past has seen all of these things. New joys, old sorrows, old joys and new sorrows too. For life is never one thing or another, never just joy, never just sorrow. It can sometimes seem that way, though, as though our tank has run dry, as though we have nothing left to give. In the dawn of the year, we are as we have ever been, a seeking, searching people, a gathering covenant people, a people who know how to sing a song of deep lament and take another's hand when the tears come. And we are a people who know how to laugh in joy and lift hands together for justice. We contain multitudes within this church and within ourselves.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, you.
Spirit of life, Spirit of love and grace, bless this new day, this new year, that we will find new joys and heal old sorrows. Help us to find a new hope for what will surely come.
Come, my joy, come, my light, come, new day.
Deep breath in and out. Excuse me if I'm still shivering. The ocean was colder than I remember it being. Maybe that's always true, that it's colder than we remember. Maybe that's necessary. Or maybe a chill just sits in me differently as I grow older. This morning was 12 years. 12 years since I started my own ritual of polar bear swimming. This morning I went back to where it all started. Years ago, camping overnight for New Year's on China Beach, my partner and I rose with the moon still high in the night sky. We made breakfast, we packed our things, we carried them up to the car. We went back to the beach, and I suddenly felt summoned to the water. Now, that's not unusual. I often feel summoned to the water and get into the water whenever I can. January, though, is not when that normally happens. Never before in midwinter. Under stars and moon, I took my clothes off. I ran into the waves, my partner standing there, more than a little dumbfounded, holding my clothes, sort of smiling. I screamed and I laughed, plunged completely under the water, and then ran from it, cursing and shivering the whole way. The biggest smile on my face, though my teeth didn't stop chattering for half an hour. It's darn hard to put clothes on a wet body when you can't feel your hands. I can tell you that in 12 years, that all remains true. In the years since, I've gone for New Year's swims in the Pacific and Atlantic, in glacial streams and rolling river rapids. In northern Ontario, I've broken the ice to get in, cutting my shins and my feet on the shards as I shuffled. Once I was in the Caribbean, Grand Cayman, I think. The only thing icy was the margarita in my hand. So I'm not sure that one really counts, but I include it anyway because I got into Lake Ontario as soon as I got back. I did have a reputation to maintain, after all. I'm not sure what the reputation is exactly, but I'm sure questions about my sanity factor into it on a roughly annual basis. Nonetheless, the polar bear dip is a ritual that's sacred to me. I've shared it with loved ones, I've even plunged with them sometimes, but mostly it's a practice that's just for me. It's one of the spiritual practices I cherish most in the wheel of my year. And really, it's all about the shock. For all the preparation I can do to bring warm clothes and a hot drink, to dry myself quickly, to get back to a car that just had the heat blasting, for all the preparation, the shock can't be avoided. Which is often true in real life, too. I have a wet coast joke for you. What are polar bears called when they get caught in the rain? They're called drizzly bears. The new year is rich with ritual and laughter. The champagne, the kiss, the big ball drop countdown, all rituals of the eve just passed. You might have enjoyed some of them last night, or like me, you might have simply tipped your hat to the year and gone to bed after dinner. This long season of holidays catching up on you, calling for rest. I have a public service announcement for parents and grandparents of young children. If your kids want to stay up for New Year, but you really want them in bed, Netflix had a bevy of child-friendly options for countdowns and ball drops that you could start whenever you wanted. File that away for next year, so long as they still can't tell time. On New Year's Day, we have other rituals. In my parents' house, January 1st is when you throw out the Christmas tree, and my mother rearranges every piece of furniture in the house. As we heard in the children's story in Shante Keys' house, they eat black-eyed peas. And in mine, we eat Hoppin' John soup, thick with those same peas. Friends from my choir in Toronto always made New Year's Day pajama party board games extravaganza, filled the house with popcorn and laughter. In Greece, the Netherlands, and Mexico, they eat ring-shaped pastries, marking that the year has come full circle. Any excuse to eat pastry, I suppose. In Sweden and Norway, rice pudding with an almond hidden inside is served on New Year's Day. It's said that whoever finds the nut can expect 12 months of good fortune and risks a minor dental problem. We have Julius Caesar to thank for the year beginning on January 1st. He intended it to honor the month's namesake, Janus, who is usually depicted with two faces, one looking into the past from which we came, and the other into the future which approaches. Looking back to know how we got here, and setting our gaze forward to where we're going. How have you marked this day in your past? What rituals do you observe with each fresh, unspoiled calendar, hung on the fridge or opened on your desk's top? Have you made resolutions? If so, you're not alone. More than half of us do. Probably the most consistent tradition across North America is honoring the new year with intention in the form of resolutions. Lest you think this is a recent practice, making resolutions for the new year is thought to have first caught on with the ancient Babylonians. They made promises in order to earn the favor of the gods and start the year off on the right foot. They would reportedly vow to pay off debts, which is still a popular resolution, and to return borrowed farm equipment. Middle of winter seems like as good a time as any to finally take back the neighbor's lawnmower. According to a 2015 Journal of Clinical Psychology poll, losing weight topped the list for 1 in 5 resolution makers, closely followed by exercising more. Top 5 were rounded out with a virtual tie between spending less and saving more, quitting smoking, and being a better person. Resolutions can be powerful things. This time each year when we take stock and try to imagine what we want for ourselves, what we want to be different this year from last. What new joys do we want to bring to life? What old joys do we want to resurrect? What old sorrows will we put away? People in this season will ask if you've made any New Year's resolutions, and the tug of the current is often hard to resist. After all, there's always something that could use a little improvement, right? My procrastination, my diet, my sleep habits, the amount of time I'm giving to community work. Now is as good a time as any to put our intentions and aspirations into words, right? As someone who's made those top 2 resolutions, losing weight, exercising more, I've made the resolutions more than once, I wanted to know, is it true that most people don't keep their resolutions? The answer I was both a little relieved and a little disappointed to discover appears to be an overwhelming, resounding yes. Richard Wiseman, a psychologist and an author with a penchant for mass participation experiments, discovered that 52% of people making New Year's resolutions were confident they'd stick it out. Only a scant 12% actually do. Of course, now the holiday is over, the season of broken resolutions has begun. As the demands and routines of everyday life return, the vast majority of the resolutions that get made this time of year are forgotten by February or March. Apparently, by March 1st, 80% have given up, or can't actually remember what it is they resolve to do. 80%. I count myself among them, certainly. To be fair, though, this pattern isn't only true of New Year's resolutions. It's a pretty common experience any time of the year. For most people I know, to decide that something about themselves, something about ourselves or our lives, needs to be different. So we declare ourselves publicly or privately. We make a start in a new direction. And then for one reason or another, the old ways reassert themselves. Diets, exercise programs, systems for keeping better track of how we spend our time. Plans for improving our relationships, decisions to be more engaged in social justice issues. There's no end to the new beginnings we could make. I can tell you I'm no exception to this. The story of my life has an ample supply of false starts. And in the season of resolutions, I always find myself sitting in the middle of a profound tension between desiring to change, wanting to be different than I am, and accepting myself the way that I am. They say that a minister's job is to love the people exactly as they are, and far too much to let them stay that way. I found that, like all good advice for ministers, it's just as valuable for congregants and for ourselves. We need to love others exactly as they are, and far too much to let them stay that way. We need to love ourselves exactly as we are, and too much to remain that way. This morning, we have some young folks staying with us in the worship service, and I'm a relatively newly minted dad, so I've been collecting and practicing some of those dad jokes I kept hearing were a required skill of the role. What do polar bears like to eat for lunch? Anybody? Burgers. It also works with burritos. Being a polar bear myself, it's a hard thing to describe the feeling of jumping into water that cold. You have to jump, first of all. Don't try to walk in slowly. Your brain will have time to realize what it is you're doing. The madness that you're attempting, and this isn't the kind of thing that you want to think too much about. Trust me. It's a profound shock to that system, that plunge is. For me, it's a necessary one. I often find myself looking at my calendar and looking at my life and thinking, well, this seems pretty full. I look at it leading up to the new year and try to imagine how my resolutions might fit into the life as it is now. Sometimes they fit fine. Sometimes they're small changes. Sometimes they're minor course corrections, gently leaning on the helm's wheel. But what of those big changes? What are those big changes we want to make? There are things in our lives that we want to change, but they're too big for small adjustments, for incremental course correction. A new career that demands quitting a job and going back to school. A new love you want to be with whose family needs them back home in Prince George. A trip to see that place, the one with the temple that you've always dreamt of, but the trip would have to take months. Those kinds of changes require bigger shocks, have bigger impacts. And the shock comes from the impact, from the encounter with something outside ourselves, and it reverberates through us. And in the echoes, some things of the past crumble to make space for the new creation. The polar bear swim for me is the symbolic shock that kicks off my new year. That reminds me that change is often uncomfortable, that sometimes I have to take the leap or make the plunge on my own. and sometimes shocks to our system, to our lives, happen all on their own. And in those times, I appreciate having a ritual for that. The shock of that New Year's Day plunge is a reminder that I can handle it, that my life can handle it, that I can handle the pain of that initial entry, that I can still go forward when all I feel is numb, that eventually the warmth and the feeling will return. Sometimes creation takes a big bang. An Arctic explorer came face to face with a polar bear. Afraid of being eaten, he fell to his knees and started to pray. When the polar bear knelt down beside him and started praying too, the man shouted, "It's a miracle!" The polar bear opened one eye and said, "Shh, please don't talk while I'm saying grace." I'm going to be good at these dad jokes. Grace, not the polar bear's kind, is actually an important part of resolutions and of change. The mountaineer William Hutchison Murray once said the following: "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness." Concerning all acts of initiative and of creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans: that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence or grace moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no person could have dreamt would have come their way. He says, "I have learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it." This deep commitment is more than just a decision or a resolution. It means taking definite practical steps towards the change we seek, steps that make turning back difficult, if not impossible. Have you ever done this? Have you ever taken a bold step like that? Have you ever bought the plane ticket, cleared space in the calendar for the show rehearsals, sent in the application for the school or the job, made the dinner invitation to that person you've been eyeing? All first big steps from which turning back is suddenly difficult. What resolution or intention for this year demands a big definite step from you? Change requires bold commitment. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Resolutions also demand joy. Marianne Williamson, who writes about spiritual dimensions in many aspects of public and private life, once said, "Your joy about the way things can be is much more powerful and persuasive than your outrage about the way things are." Your joy about the way things can be is much more powerful and persuasive than your outrage about the way things are. My colleague, the Reverend David Morris of the UU Congregation of the Outer Banks, notes how trying to fix something we hate, whether it's something about ourselves or something about the world, locks us into a place of rejection, of anger or fear, and when it fails or when delays seem unbearably long, it leads towards bitterness and despair. Working to cultivate and nurture something new that we desire for ourselves or for the world moves us into a place of affection, compassion, appreciation. If it doesn't immediately succeed, we're far less likely to give up on the effort, because the effort itself feels like a joyful participation in change, rather than a dutiful burden. Resolutions also demand compassion for ourselves. If you're a fan of the freckled, red-headed orphan from Prince Edward Island, you'll probably recognize Anne of Green Gables' mantra: Tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it. It speaks to how each day we will try again. As Doug noted in his reflection, each time the earth comes back to this point, we are reminded that we can start anew. The best part of the mantra, though, for me, is the part that I left off the first time. Tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it. Yet. No mistakes. Yet. Anne has no doubt that there will be mistakes tomorrow, too. They just haven't been made yet. Tomorrow we will begin again. Though we have failed today, though we have made mistakes, tomorrow we will begin again. We will begin again in love. I've found it helpful sometimes myself to imagine my progress toward my intention in the same way that author Toni Morrison talks about social change, that it is the slow walk of trees. Each year we have the chance to reach up, to grow out, to spread our branches wide, and from the tips of those tree branches to drop new seeds. That new seed that starts next year, that grows up, is further along your path. So plant new seeds, dig up the earth, make new space, take the plunge, dive in. It will be a shock, I assure you. Make a commitment. Seek out the joy. Have compassion for yourself. In this new year, blessed be. Friends, tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it yet. And as we begin this new year, it is a new year with no mistakes in it yet. As we begin it, I offer this blessing from author Neil Gaiman. I hope that in this year to come, you make mistakes. Because if you are making mistakes, then you are making new things. Trying new things, learning, living, pushing yourself, changing your world. You are doing things you've never done before. And most importantly, you're doing something. So that's my wish for you, and for all of us, and my wish for myself, that I will make new mistakes, that I will make glorious, amazing mistakes, that I will make mistakes that nobody's ever made before. Don't freeze, don't stop, don't worry that it isn't good enough, or it isn't perfect, whatever it is, art, or love, or work, or family, or life, whatever it is you're scared of doing, do it. Make your mistakes. Set your intentions. Make your mistakes. And begin again in love. Begin again in love. Begin again in love. As many times as you need to, begin again in love. May it be so. Amen.